Hello, this is Atta Durakan with the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, February 24th, 2026, coming to you from my home studio, and we start on the front page, Together Decatur, Library's Teen Scene Thriving. Kids keep coming back for books, games, crafts, and friends. And this article is by Donette Beckett. Clementine Houston is a regular visitor to the Decatur Public Library, but it's not the books that keep the 13-year-old coming back. "I find it fun," she said. For Clementine and other local teenagers, the Decatur Public Library has become a social hub with opportunities to sew, paint, and make collages, as well as watch movies and play games. "I would love for them to come in, get their library card, hang out, and read all day," said Alexis Tippett, 27, librarian for the teen section. "But if they come in and don't do any of that, that's just as good with me." Clementine takes part in the Teen Craft Club. She has learned various skills, including sewing. "It went interesting," she said about the finished product. "I didn't know how to sew, but I just guessed. That's how I learned," she said. "That's how I learned," said Tippett, who leads the class. Pom-pom portraits were the latest Teen Craft Club project. "I sketched it out and filled it in with the pom-poms," Day said about the images of the two clowns she created. Other activities designed around teens include bingo, Nintendo Switch, and movie nights. Board games from their youth have also become popular again. "Even the 16 and 17-year-olds want Candyland," Tippett said. The Teen Craft Club activity for March will include decorating tote bags. All of the programs and supplies are free to the teenagers. "The monthly crafts program seems to draw the biggest crowd," the librarian said. "It's meant to have fun, but not to exert yourself too much mentally," Tippett said. During her 2 years as a librarian, Tippett has made it her goal to add more educational programs, including an online driver's education program. Tippett understands the library can also be used as a community building. "This is one of the last places that we have except for parks," she said, about the free options for teens. "But nobody wants to be at the parks right now." Information, including date, time, and project, for each program is available on the library's events page. Registration is recommended for each. Teens have their own section at the library for those days when they just need to get away. Signage warns patrons who aren't in grades 7 through 12 to leave the space for the kids. "They should leave the furniture and the games and everything for the teens," Tippett said. "Safety is a priority for Tippett. I worry that seeing the younger kids or older adults will scare the teens away," she said. While she is supervising the area, the teen librarian also takes the opportunities to get to know the children. "It gives me an actual chance to talk to them," Tippett said. Clementine has found the library an ideal place to meet up with her friends and make new ones as well. "And I've met up with people that I thought I'd never see again," she said. "It's been really fun." Let's see here. There's a large color photo. Teen librarian Alexis Tippett puts out the supplies for the monthly Teen Craft Club at the Decatur Public Library on February 5th. And she's shown at a plastic folding table, white top, with plenty of beads and looks like palms and paintbrushes, glue, etc. for the crafts. And she's on the far side of the table leaning over. And she's smiling as she's doing it. And in the background are other tables and chairs in a similar setup. Joseph Ressler, Herald and Review photo credit. And let's see here, the large color photo on the front. Clementine Houston, 13, makes a pom-pom portrait during the monthly Teen Craft Club at the Decatur Public Library on February 5th. And she's seated at a table, appears by herself, has her headphones on. And she's focused on a white, small, maybe 8x10 piece of backing. and on it she's putting the white pom-poms. They almost look like small marshmallows. Joseph Ressler, Herald and Review, photo credit. Two sidebars, Decatur Public Library Teens. For more information on programs for teenagers at the Decatur Public Library, visit the library's website, which they don't appear to give here. And hashtag Together Decatur, do you know a person or of a story that exemplifies the best of Decatur? Well, if you do, contact Donette Beckett at 217-421-6983 or dbeckett at herald-review.com. Business: Decatur plans for new McDonald's unveiled in South Shores. This article's by Scott Perry, Decatur. The wait for another dining option in the South Shores area of Decatur is about to end. Construction is expected to begin in June on a new McDonald's at the intersection of US 51 and Southside Drive. The announcement ends years of speculation about what business might go there once local developers Carmala obtained the property in 2019, demolished the PNC Bank that once stood there, and did major site work to enlarge the parcel for development. When it opens around October, it will be the seventh McDonald's owned by Gary and Andrew Birschbach in Macon County and create a presence at every major entry point into Decatur. I've been in Decatur for 25 years, have been always looking for an opportunity to serve the South Shores area and anticipate an overwhelming reception, said Gary Birschbach, who arrived in Decatur in 2000 with the purchase of the Water Street and Mount Zion Road locations. Locating a restaurant in South Shores hasn't been an easy sale. Initial attempts to gain corporate approval soon after the new site became available failed, partly because of demographics. Not enough traffic and declining population, and then the arrival of the COVID-19 pandemic. While some of the statistics haven't changed, the Birschbach say McDonald's attitude toward new stores and feeding the growing demand for better access to online and delivery services did. I think this location just kind of floated to the surface, and then saying, hey, this is very possible, Gary Birschbach said. The design of the new restaurant will take into account the growing mobile order business, with parking and a separate service window for those customers, and enhancements will improve drive-through service. It will be state-of-the-art, Andrew Birschbach said, with an eye toward making the dining experience more convenient and efficient for customers and staff. When it comes to workers, the Birschbachs are confident that staffing won't be an issue. They are hopeful the new restaurant, which will employ as many as 75 workers and bring the total McDonald's employment in Macon County to nearly 500, will tap into a whole new pool of prospects in the South Shores area and the communities in the southeastern part of the county, attracted by a shorter commute and a host of benefits. The Birschbach said they are confident the new location will be a perfect fit, with no shortage of customers. In addition to the South Shores neighborhoods, they point to the nearby athletic fields at Rotary Park, Red Tail Run Golf Course, the Macon County Law Enforcement Training Center, and neighboring communities as prime customers. They are also encouraged by the community outreach opportunities. What a perfect place to have a coffee with a cop, Gary Birschbach said, referring to the regular gatherings they host that provide community members an opportunity to interact in a casual setting with members of the Decatur Police Department. Police headquarters is just a few short blocks away on Southside Drive. And the schools in the area can benefit from McTeacher Nights, a fundraising event during which teachers work alongside McDonald's staff to serve customers, most of whom are students and their families, and get a share of the night's proceeds. Obviously, you want a successful business, but part of it is, what can you do to have an impact on the community, Andrew Birschbach said. A nice medium-sized color photo here of Andrew and Gary Birschbach, each holding the bottom end of the very famous Golden Arches emblem. It's probably 2 feet tall and maybe a foot wide, and each man is wearing a checked blue shirt, and Andrew wearing blue pants and a black belt, and Gary wearing gray pants and a black belt. both shown outdoors at the intersection of Southside Drive and US 51 in the South Shores area of Decatur. The caption says that Birchbox, the owners of six McDonald's restaurants in Macon County, plan to open their seventh location there this year. Joseph Ressler, Herald and Review, photo credit. And we move on to the local and state page, A3, Jesse Jackson, services set. This article is by Rebecca Johnson, Chicago Tribune. Chicago. The Reverend Jesse Jackson's family announced revised funeral arrangements Thursday afternoon for the Chicago-based civil rights icon and presidential candidate who died on February 17th. The family said in a statement that after first releasing their plans Wednesday, they heard from leaders who extended the extraordinary honor of holding services in Jackson's native state, South Carolina, and Washington, D.C. Information on registering for events is forthcoming. We have heard from people around the world whose lives were touched by Reverend Jackson's tireless efforts to expand opportunity, build coalitions, and advance a more just, peaceful, and hopeful world, the statement said. Thursday, February 26, public visitation at Rainbow Push Coalition, location 930 East 50th Street, Chicago, time 10 a.m. Friday, February 27, public visitation at Rainbow Push Coalition, again, same location, time 10 a.m. Sunday, March 1st through Wednesday, March 4th, formal services in South Carolina and Washington, D.C. Friday, March 6th, the People's Celebration at House of Hope, location 752 East 114th Street, Chicago. Time, the doors open at 9 a.m. and the service from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Sunday, March 7th, private homegoing services at Rainbow Push Coalition, location 930 East 50th Street, Chicago. Time, doors open at 8 a.m. Service, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Moving forward, moving together, Jackson's son, Jesse Jackson Jr., said at a Wednesday morning news conference that everyone of all political leanings is welcome to attend the services because his life, quote, is broad enough to cover the full spectrum of what it means to be an American, unquote. But he asked that attendees be respectful. Dad would have wanted us to have a great meeting to discuss our differences, to find ways of moving forward and moving together, he said. If his life becomes a turning point in our national political discourse, amen. The founder of the Kenwood-based Rainbow Push Coalition died Tuesday morning at 84, peacefully and surrounded by his family. His health had been in decline for years, and he recently spent weeks in the hospital for progressive supranuclear palsy, a rare neurological disorder. Tributes from across the city and country poured in Tuesday from all walks of life. Neighbors and friends remembered him for his generous personality, while local politicians said he was an inspiration. Governor J.B. Pritzker and Mayor Brandon Johnson ordered public buildings across the city and state to fly flags at half-staff. Yusuf Jackson called his father Wednesday a lion among lions, who dedicated his life to public service to make the nation better, the world more just, and people better neighbors. Reverend Jackson would say, "It is my religion that makes me political, not my politics that make me religious," he said. We, his family, and the many others touched by him, inspired by him, are left obligated to continue his work to make our nation a better place for all. A Baptist minister born in South Carolina, Jackson was a protege of the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., who participated in the Selma to Montgomery, Alabama marches. He continued the fight for social justice and civil rights through the coalition and campaigned twice unsuccessfully for president. He stepped down as the president of Rainbow Push in 2023. Tribune columnist Steve Daly called him in 1990 a political force of nature who is both an eloquent voice for the dispossessed and a relentless manipulator of events and issues, hopscotching from coal strike to South Africa to statehood for the District of Columbia. What's happening? Heartland CASA to host annual coffee crawl, Decatur. Heartland CASA will host its annual CASA coffee crawl on Friday, February 27th and Saturday, February 28th at 17 coffee locations throughout Macon, Christian, and Moultrie counties. The event will support local coffee shops while learning more about advocacy for children in foster care. The CASA Coffee Crawl is intentionally designed as a friend-raiser, not a fundraiser, Lori McDaniel, Heartland CASA Recruitment and Retention Manager, said in a news release. Rather than focusing on donations, the event centers on building awareness, strengthening community connections, and introducing new people to Heartland CASA's mission and the critical role volunteers play in the lives of children who have experienced abuse or neglect. The list of participating locations and coffee crawl details can be found at iheartcasa.org/coffee crawl or by calling 217-428-8424. Mattoon Forum to Stage Congress Hopefuls. Mattoon, a forum featuring candidates for the 15th Congressional District, is scheduled for Tuesday, February 24th in Mattoon. The event will take place from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Burgess Auditorium, 1701 Wabash Avenue. Doors open at 6:30 p.m. Candidates who have confirmed their attendance are Democrats Paul Davis, Kyle Nudo, Randy Raley, and Jennifer Todd, and Republican Ryan Tabrugi. The 15th is a sprawling district that covers most of the rural areas and small towns of central Illinois, stretching from the Missouri and Iowa borders all the way to the Indiana state line. The seat is held by Mary Miller, a Republican from Hinesboro. Miller will be in Washington, D.C. for the State of the Union. Organizers said Republican Judy Bowlby had not confirmed her attendance at the Mattoon event. The forum is organized by local community members and is not affiliated with any political party or campaign. The event is designed to provide voters with an opportunity to hear directly from candidates seeking to represent Illinois' 15th Congressional District in the U.S. House of Representatives. The primary election is March 17th. The evening will follow a structured format to ensure fairness and equal opportunity for all participating candidates, attendees. We'll hear candidate statements and responses to questions on key issues affecting residents for the district. For more information, contact Amanda Grant at amandajoe_84@hotmail.com. Also on the local page, an interesting article here. Christians flock to Assisi to view bones of St. Francis. This article is by Nicole Winfield and Gregario Borgia, Associated Press, Assisi, Italy. The bones of St. Francis of Assisi went on public display for the first time Sunday, capping an 800-year saga over his bodily remains and confirming the enduring appeal to Christians of venerating a saint's relics. Nearly 400,000 people registered in advance to see the bone fragments, which are contained in a slim, bulletproof plexiglass case in the lower basilica of St. Francis in the hilltop Umbrian town the medieval friar made famous. The Franciscans decided to exhibit the bones for 1 month through March 22nd to honor the 800th anniversary of St. Francis's death in 1226. The aim is to revive his message of peace and fraternity that made him one of the most beloved Christian saints and inspired Pope Francis to take his name, the first pope to do so. The exposition of his bodily remains is particularly remarkable given the somewhat tortured history of the body of St. Francis, a wealthy merchant's son born in 1182, who gave up all his possessions to live as a mendicant friar. At the end of his life, St. Francis's body was said to have acquired the stigmata, the first documented case of a saint acquiring the marks of Christ on the cross. In death, his body was lost for hundreds of years after it was secretly buried by one of his followers who feared it would be stolen during the fight over relics that was common in Christianity in the Middle Ages. That history is recounted in an exhibition mounted in the Franciscan convent next to the basilica, which pilgrims can visit as part of their appointment to pass by the bones. St. Francis is the patron saint of Hospital Sisters of St. Francis, the order that serves HSHS St. Mary's in Decatur, HSHS Good Shepherd in Shelbyville, HSHS St. Anthony's in Effingham, and HSHS St. John's in Springfield, among others. Brother Giulio Cesario, spokesman for the Franciscans in Assisi, said the exposition wasn't a macabre celebration of the dead. Rather, he said, it was part of the long tradition of Christian Christians venerating the physical remains of saints to experience the spirit that lived in them. It is not so much about venerating Francis, but rather encountering Francis by venerating the Holy Spirit who filled the humanity, who filled that humanity and made it capable of giving itself, he said. And it is, at least for a believer, a way to renew oneself in this one life. Over centuries, the fascination with relics has, of course, led to abuses, with thefts, forgeries, and now online sales all part of their history. But that doesn't diminish their hold on the faithful, said Sean Pilcher, who runs SACRA, Relics of the Saints, which provides consulting and authentication services to the Catholic Church. If the saints are our brothers and sisters in heaven, then it makes sense that we're going to have things that we hold on to, he said. And what the church does is just take this natural desire that we all have for connection and belonging and direct it in a way that leads us toward Christ. What is remarkable to a viewer today is how tiny St. Francis seems. He was known to suffer poor health and nutrition, and the delicate, slight skeletal bones seem to confirm his diminutive stature. For Fiorella Farina, a resident of northern Reggio Emilia, who is so devoted to St. Francis that she bought a country house in Assisi and named her children Francesco and Francesca, the exposition is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Just talking about it gives me goosebumps, she said outside the basilica. It's an event I couldn't miss. St. Francis, she said, went against all societal norms to live out the gospel message of peace, care for the poor, and the environment. In this historic moment, we need him, she said. Security was tight but discreet on Sunday morning as the first pilgrims passed through the metal detectors before filing into the basilica. Police declined to provide details but said extra officer sniffer dogs, plain-clothed police, television cameras, and other measures were being used to protect the relics. Given the history of St. Francis's body, such measures seem only appropriate. Even before he died, St. Francis gained such a reputation for sanctity that he traveled with an armed escort when he made his final return to Assisi, said Brother William Short, professor of Christian spirituality at the Franciscan School of Theology at the University of San Diego. There are also references in contemporary accounts of people reaching up to try to grab parts of his tunic as he went by on horseback, believing that his relics could help heal the sick or prevent calamity, Short said in an interview at the Franciscan residence in Rome, where he directs an international Franciscan study center. When St. Francis died October 3, 1226, he was initially buried in a small Assisi church, San Giorgio. Within 2 years, Pope Gregory IX canonized him and laid the cornerstone for a basilica to house his tomb. But on the eve of the transfer, St. Francis's trusted aide, Brother Elias, took the body and secretly buried it in the basilica, fearing it could be stolen, said Short. The body remained there, hidden in a column, but unmarked until 1818. That's when excavations discovered the remains, and Pope Pius VII confirmed the bones belonged to St. Francis. It was a matter of safety and economics, Short explained. If you have a big saint, a new saint, and this guy had the potential to be a really big saint, whomever gets the body gets the pilgrims, and Assisi now has them in spades. Some people signed up to visit the relics when the exposition was first announced in October, and they were slotted into 10-minute increments starting Sunday morning. Silvanella Tamos traveled to Assisi from Pordenone, north of Venice, with a group of 54 people from her diocese. They had had one of the earliest slots Sunday at 9:30 a.m. It's a body that's alive, she said. It's not a dead body. He still has a lot to tell us today, she said. And a very interesting photo here taken from behind the plexiglass case looking back toward the hundreds of people inside the basilica who are waiting in line going through the cordoned areas. Beautiful basilica, people in line standing patiently, and Pilgrims honor the bones of St. Francis during the first public display inside the St. Francis Basilica, marking the 800th anniversary of the saint's death Sunday in Assisi, Italy. And the photo was taken from just slightly above standing, so it may be as someone standing and then raising up a camera and taking the photo looking back. Giorgio Borgia, Associated Press, photo credit. And certainly nice to have the local tie-in with the HSHS medical system here. On to the weather page, B8, and it says, Chicago rings in Lunar New Year, thousands revel, Year of the Horse. This article's by Eva Remigen Toba, Chicago Tribune, Chicago. Though lion dancers led the parade, Saturday's Lunar New Year celebration in Uptown was all about the Year of the Horse. In honor of the holiday, which began February 17th, thousands gathered along Argyle Street for the neighborhood's 40-plus-year tradition. More than 20 parade entries representing local community groups, Asian cultural institutions, schools, and performance troupes marched down the corridor in a vibrant display of music, movement, and heritage. While Lunar New Year's rooted in the Chinese lunar calendar, the Argyle Parade reflects Uptown's broader Asian community. Uptown United, a community economic development nonprofit, has organized the parade for the past decade. The parade is not only a cultural celebration, but also an economic boost during one of Chicago's slowest seasons. Throughout the day, nearly every Asian-owned business along Argyle buzzed with customers. Lines stretched out the doors at neighborhood staples like Chiu Kwan Bakery. Festivities before the parade began at the Bazazian Library, where children decorated paper horse heads and listened to Lunar New Year-themed stories. Uni Uni Boba and Hai Bio Cafe collaborated on a pop-up market featuring local AAPI vendors selling Asian-inspired pastries, artwork, and jewelry. The Vietnamese Association of Illinois marked its 50th anniversary with an open house and presented an exhibit in partnership with Timeline Theater Company and Heritage Museum of Asian Art, highlighting the past years of the horse. And a very small color photo, but very colorful and vibrant. People performed traditional Chinese lion dance costumes in Chicago's Uptown neighborhood during Uptown's annual Lunar New Year celebration in Chicago's Uptown neighborhood on Saturday, February 21st, 2026. The lion dance brings luck and prosperity and is part of Chinese cultural importance. The Chinese Senior Association gathered performers and organized costumes and music for a march and parade. Very cool. Josh Bolin, Chicago Tribune, TNS, photo credit. And with that, we are at the end of the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for this Tuesday, February 24, 2026. We'll take a short break and return with the second half hour.